We are going to do today redox equations. That's what we're about to work on. No, I'm going to fix. So, Adeline, I'm going to fix all the quizzes and everything's going to be all right. I just have to go in and delete and start from scratch and rebuild everything. It made it more complicated because I published everything and you guys jumped on it and you're like, ooh, what is this? Candy, click buttons. And all of a sudden, now there's submissions. And then you can't delete a quiz once a student starts submitting on it. And Canvas won't let you alter it or delete it once a student actually clicks on it. So even though there was no actual submissions made, Canvas is also making it extraordinarily difficult for me to actually delete it and change it. Ayla, what's my new plan for the afternoon? I don't have one yet. My plan right now is to do this. And then I will come up with a new plan while I'm eating lunch. So one plan at a time. That's all I can do. All right, I'm recording. It is Wednesday, feels like Monday, July 15th, and we're doing redox equations. So I've got a screen share up. This is what we're going to do. We're going to introduce redox. Redox, interestingly, I think that just because it sounds nice, they do it redox, but it stands for reduction oxidation. Usually we say oxidation reduction. We almost always put the oxidation first. Yeah, Ayla, thanks. Good luck. It's oxidation and reduction. And the terms oxidation and reduction have definitions in and of themselves. So let's define oxidation and reduction. And there's a couple of definitions for these. There's an old definition and sort of a newer definition. The old definition, let's do the old definitions first. The old definitions are useful in an organic chemistry sense. Oxidation was defined as the gain of oxygen or loss of hydrogen. So that when we go through and we look at an equation, perhaps a combustion of methane, CH4 plus O2 goes to make CO2 plus 2H2O. And then I think I need a 2 out in here to balance it. What we could say is that the methane has been oxidized because it has gained oxygen and has lost hydrogen. So that's one way of looking at that definition. Reduction was the opposite. Reduction was defined as the gain of hydrogen and loss of oxygen, or loss of oxygen. In this sense, this example still serves. Actually, let's rewrite that example and we'll do it down here. The same example serves to show reduction because if I took methane, CH4, and reacted with 2O2 to make CO2 and water, then what I could say about the oxygen is that the oxygen is being reduced in that it is gaining hydrogen and losing oxygen. So this is reduction. Now that definition, the old definition, was limiting. It was a limited definition. It was limited to carbon and oxygen. And what if things are undergoing oxidation that don't contain carbon and oxygen, then we need a more broad definition. And so we have the broad definition of oxidation and reduction. Oxidation is defined as the loss of electrons. And reduction is defined as the gain of electrons. And we come up with sort of a way to remember this. Oxidation is loss. Reduction is gain. And what we pull is the first letter of each word, and what we come up with is oil rig. It's one way to remember it. There's another way to remember it that says Leo the lion says grr. And Leo the lion says grr never actually resonated with me. I can never actually quite figure out how that relates to oxidation is loss and reduction is gain. But this just is a simple, easy way. Oil rig, oxidation is loss, reduction is gain. And because
Can we think of it as like reduction of charge because of the adding of electrons?
Or sort of, but the, oil rig's bad for Earth, sorry. Charge is one way of looking at this, but what we tend to use is another thing. We use what's called an oxidation number. And so since we're looking at the loss and gain of electrons, we need a way to keep track of electrons. So we need a bookkeeping system for electrons. And we need it separate from charge. Because not everything has charges. So Jeremy, that would work great for monatomic ions, might even work okay for polyatomic ions. But the problem is that many of the species that we're going to be looking at are covalently bound and they don't have charges. So we need a bookkeeping method that is separate from charges, because not only can ions be oxidized or reduced, but molecular things can be oxidized or reduced. And if we go back up to our example up here, there's no charges. So methane is molecular and covalently bound, as is O2 and CO2 and water. There was no charges in this entire thing. And so I can't just keep track of charges. I have to have some other bookkeeping system. So that bookkeeping system, we call it oxidation numbers.
So is this bookkeeping system only used for covalently bound things, or it can be used for more as well?
Ayla, it can be used for everything. So it is all inclusive of things that are covalent and things that are ionic. So the bookkeeping system, its name is oxidation numbers. And we just have a set of rules for how we assign an oxidation number. So rules for assigning oxidation numbers. Okay, those rules start off by saying that all elements in their elemental state have an oxidation number of 0.
Does that go for ions too?
Nope. So in the elemental state, we're saying that these are neutral.
Got it.
So they're not ions. These are neutral elements. So all elements in their elemental state have oxidation number 0. Examples: sodium, lead, N2, O2, H2, even S8. Anything that is a single symbol that has no charge, its oxidation number is 0. And so I'll use a little 0 with a line through it to not confuse it with an electron or something else. So there's the oxidation number. Regarding monatomic ions, the oxidation number on a monatomic ion. Is the same as the charge state. So, example. If I have sodium plus or lead 4 plus or nitrogen 3 minus, O2 minus, chromium 6 plus, the oxidation numbers would follow that this would be a plus 1 oxidation number, a plus 4 oxidation number, a minus 3, a minus 2, or a plus 6. So I typically turn them around when I do an oxidation number. I put the charge followed by the value. For a charge state, I put the value, then the charge. For instance, 6 plus. So it's the way that I'm keeping track of things, that these are oxidation numbers. And these guys are charges. So I'd like to be able to.
I've always wondered why you put the plus afterwards.
That's why I do it.
And I always do that for charge states anyways.
Yeah. So this is it's just a way that I do it that that makes it so when we get to this point, there's a difference and we can keep track of the oxidation numbers separate from the charge states. Okay. So we have a rule for all elements in the elemental state. They're all zero. The oxidation number on a monatomic ion is the same as the charge state. Then there are a couple of elements for which we have rules. Combined hydrogen. And by combined, what we mean is covalent hydrogen. Is always plus one. Combined oxygen meaning oxygen that is covalently bound is always minus two, except, and there's an exception for this one, peroxides. Peroxide is when you have two oxygens bound together in a covalent form, and then each one of the oxygens is a minus one.
That's peroxide with an E, right? You just forgot the E.
I did. Thank you. So a couple of examples I guess I could do. I could do CH4. These hydrogens are all plus one. I could do an example where I have CO2 or hydrogen peroxide. In CO2, the oxygens are minus two. In hydrogen peroxide, they're each minus one so that they add up to minus two, which is where the rule for the peroxide comes from. Then we have one more rule, which is combined fluorine meaning covalent fluorine is always minus one. So an example here would be if I had CF4, then the fluorine in this is a minus one for the fluorine. Okay, those are the three rules that I have. Beyond those three rules, the other rule, and let me know if I'm going too fast. I'm trying to keep some of those on the screen because I know you guys are trying to write at the same time I am. The other rule is that the charge or the sum, let's say, the sum of the oxidation numbers in a covalent compound must add to zero. Or the sum of the oxidation numbers or in a covalent compound must add to zero, or for a polyatomic, ion, they must sum, or the sum must be equal, that's what I want. Or for a polyatomic ion, the sum must be equal to the charge state on the polyatomic. Okay, so this rule needs a little bit more explanation, it's a little bit harder. For instance, let's take that CF4 that we were looking at. CF4 is a molecule with no charge on it. It is not a polyatomic ion. We know, based on the rules for fluorine, that fluorine is a minus one, but we have no rule for carbon. So we don't know what the oxidation number on carbon is, but based on this rule here, the sum of the oxidation numbers in a covalent compound must add to zero. That means that when I take carbon, carbon plus four times fluorine must add up to zero. And actually what I'll do is we'll do that zero because that's the rule that we're using here. And I also know that fluorine is a minus one. So I can say that carbon plus four times, now for fluorine, what I'll do is I'll substitute in the minus one charge, must add up to zero. That means that carbon minus four must equal zero, or that carbon, now mathematically, carbon must equal positive four. So now we have the formula that carbon and 4 fluorines, the oxidation numbers are minus 1 and plus 4. Now, what we do is we don't say that this is a minus 4. We're not totaling all of the fluorines. We're just listing the value of one of the fluorines so that we know what the oxidation state of that fluorine is. And we're listing the oxidation state of the carbon. So irregardless of how many of them there are, we are listing the oxidation state of only one of them, just so that we know what the individual fluorine is. We don't want to confuse this with trying to say, all right, I know there's 4 negatives and 4 positives, because this isn't ionic. It's not an ionic compound. This is a bookkeeping method, an artificial man-made bookkeeping method to track the sharing of electrons and how that sharing is equal or unequal to a degree. And so we don't try to total the numbers up here. We just list the individual oxidation number for the individual element. And that means that depending upon my compound, I may get different charge states. For instance, look, if I do CH4, hydrogen is plus 1. Based on my rule that said combined hydrogen, this rule here, combined hydrogen is always plus 1. So in methane, CH4, the hydrogen is plus 1. I don't have a rule for carbon, but I can calculate out what carbon is. In this case, carbon plus 4 hydrogens must add up to 0. Why 0? Because this is a molecule. And as a molecule, it doesn't have a charge. It's not a polyatomic ion. So I add this up to 0. I then take the value of plus 1 and put it in for the hydrogen. And then I can start a calculation and figure out what the carbon is. Carbon plus 4 times the quantity plus 1 must add up to 0. Carbon plus 4 then must be 0. Or in this case, carbon is actually minus 4. So now I know from my formula, CH4, that carbon is minus 4 and hydrogen is plus 1. Unlike charges, you know, when we write a charge on something like sodium, if I'm looking at sodium, I write positive, not Na plus 1, the 1 is redundant. But in an oxidation number sense, what I do is I write Na, that is the charge, and its oxidation number is plus 1. I always include the 1 in an oxidation number because I don't want it to look like a charge state. I don't want to get confused between the positive that is the charge state and the oxidation number.
Well, so how do you know how that you want to find carbon?
In this sense, when I wrote CF4 and CH4, I had a rule for fluorine, but I had no rule for carbon. That means that if there is no rule for carbon, somehow I have to be able to calculate out what carbon is. I had a rule for hydrogen, but I had no rule for carbon. So I need to calculate out what carbon is. I chose examples where I knew one, but not the other. So that's why I knew that I was calculating for carbon.
Are there examples where you don't know both?
There are examples where I don't know some, yes, and I have to use some sorts of equation to be able to figure it out or find it out. Yes, that does happen. There are other ways to determine what the oxidation number is in when we have a Lewis structure. If we have the Lewis structure, we can work from the Lewis structure and we can figure out what the oxidation state is from the Lewis structure. So basically, I hate to show that just yet. Let me not show that yet, Jeremy. Let me hang on to that. And generally, I don't give you that problem. So that doesn't happen for you.
It seems like carbon's such a, like one of the most common elements that there would be a rule for it.
Except that notice that carbon in this case was +4 and carbon in this case was -4, that carbon changes. If I make a rule for it, I'm saying that carbon's never going to change.
Got it, yeah.
But carbon has to float. Carbon changes based on what it's connected to. So the rules, the reason that I'm choosing these rules, the rules are really built from the oxidation numbers. So fluorine, being the most electronegative element, always steals the electron in the pair that it's bonding with, and therefore it always gets a -1. It always takes the electron, in essence. Hydrogen, being one of the least electronegative, always gives up its electron, and therefore it's always +1. Oxygen, being almost as electronegative as fluorine, always takes the 2 electrons, and so is always -2. But it's an artificial game that I'm playing. I'm setting these rules, and then I'm keeping track of the numbers, and then we see how they change in a chemical reaction. So I can't set a rule for carbon because carbon's in the middle of oxidation states, and it's going to gain and lose depending on what it's bonded to. So its oxidation number is constantly going to change.
What does it mean to be oxidized again?
Oxidation is loss. It means the loss of electrons. So we'll go through and I'll show examples. So we're still sort of working on the rules. Once we get the rules straight, then we'll show examples of how we use them. Kerrigan's dying to ask something. She's like, got her finger on that space bar.
Yeah, no, you're going to get to it. I just don't understand why we're doing it, but I am going to, we're going to get there.
We're going to get there.
Okay.
Why are we doing chemistry? because chemistry is everything. Because chemistry is the foundation of everything around us. It's everything we can see, we can touch, we can feel, we can taste, we can smell. Chemistry is everything in it. And it is the foundation of the way that the universe works at the level just above physics. And then you get to physics, and then physics really tells you how all the chemistry works, which is kind of cool. And then below physics, then we have math. And math really tells you how all the physics works. And below math, there's nothing. Math is God. Math is everything. Okay. Yeah, the why we're doing this, actually, I always like to give you that sort of idea of why we're doing this. And the answer is that some chemical reactions cannot be balanced by traditional methods. Some chemical reactions where electrons are traded cannot be balanced by looking at the reactants and the products. The only way to balance them is to know how they're changing through their redox reactions, how many electrons they're gaining or losing. And we balance them based on the gain or loss of electrons. That means that we need to understand the bookkeeping method before we can balance those types of reactions or even recognize those types of reactions. So that's the greater sort of why we need to do this, because there are many types of reactions. Redox reactions, before I go into the rest of the rules, redox reactions fit combustion pattern. So a redox reaction where I take carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, X, Y, Z in different ratios, and I add to it O2 to make CO2 plus H2O. The oxygen is changing in oxidation state. It's going from 0 to -2. And the carbon, likewise, is changing in oxidation state. And it's changing from something, I don't know what it is over here, but typically it's anywhere from -4 all the way through +4. Those are the oxidation states that it can take on, but it goes to a +4 oxidation state over here. And so it's typically changing in its oxidation state. Another style is the single replacement. in the single replacement, an example of that type of equation is zinc reacting with two HCls to produce zinc chloride plus hydrogen. Oxidation numbers change in this. The zinc starts off at zero and goes to a plus two. The hydrogen at plus one, the chloride at minus one. The chloride is still at minus one, although I didn't balance that properly. And the hydrogen goes to zero. And so there are changes in oxidation state where the hydrogen is changing and the zinc is changing, but the chloride is not. So single replacements show changes in oxidation state. Another example, question?
Yes, we're referencing, what's changing is the, it's not the charge.
It's not, it's the oxidation number.
Oh, geez, okay.
Right. The charge is changing too, but the oxidation number is really what's changing.
But it's still an exchange of electrons, right?
It is, and that's what makes it a redox, is the exchange in electrons. Electrons are being traded. And that's what we're trying to recognize. And so we can only recognize a redox reaction when we see changes in oxidation state. A change in oxidation state denotes a redox reaction. But only in hydrogen and oxygen? No, not true. Notice that zinc changed here. And that's independent of hydrogen and oxygen.
And that's also independent of zinc's charge?
That's, well, sort of. Zinc here as a metal had no charge, but when it combined with chlorine, it became a plus two ion, and then also has a plus two oxidation state. So we'll get to those two. So single replacement is another type. Frequently, combination and I want to say decombination. It's combination or, what's the other term? When they fragment apart, there's combination and there is, what is it?
Decomposition.
That's the one I want. Thank you. Decomposition. These are frequently redox, but not always. So because they are frequently but not always redox, I'm hesitant to show, because I don't want to get the example wrong. So I'm not going to show examples for those, but these are reactions where we have A plus B goes to make C, and A goes to make B plus C. So this is a combination and a decomposition. So to understand these types of reactions, we need to understand redox reactions. We need to understand redox systems. And that means that we need to understand oxidation states. Okay, I had shown you part of this rule. The sum of the oxidation numbers in a covalent compound must add to zero, or for a polyatomic ion, the sum must equal the charge state on the polyatomic ion. So there's really two pieces here to this. This second piece, I'm trying to think if there's a way that I could highlight this out. Let's say that this piece, all the way to the or, is for covalent compounds. So it's a rule that we use for covalent compounds, but then there's an or that's in here. And then I have this for ionic compounds, for polyatomics. And I have a different way that I calculate for polyatomics. So I need to be able to take this and show an example of this one separately. That kind of works. That highlights out that it's different. Okay, so for a polyatomic, how do I handle polyatomics? We'll do this example and then we'll take a break, I think. Yeah, no, we still got 20 minutes. I guess we're doing all right. PO4, 3 minus, phosphate. In the phosphate ion, this is the charge state. The oxidation states for oxygen are a minus 2, but for phosphorus, I don't know. I don't know, there's no rule for phosphorus. So what we say here is that if I take phosphorus plus 4 oxygens, they must add up to the minus 3. This is the charge state.
And that's what that says in this new thing.
That's what that rule says. The okay. rule says in gray, for a polyatomic ion, the sum must be equal to the charge state on the polyatomic ion.
Cool. Thank you.
So then I can take and I can substitute in the minus 2 in for the oxygen. And so I get phosphorus plus 4 times now a minus 2 must equal minus 3.
And that minus 2 is the, what is that?
That's the charge on, or the oxidation number on oxygen.
Not plus 2. No, you're right, it's minus 2. Just kidding. Yes.
Okay. So that means that phosphorus minus 8 equals a minus 3. Or I add 8 to both sides and phosphorus must equal a plus 5. So the oxidation state on phosphorus is plus 5. And I would read then PO4 3 minus as being a plus 5 oxidation state on phosphorus and a minus 2 oxidation state on oxygen. So I have the oxidation numbers. And I have the charge state separate. Let's do one more example of a polyatomic. And we'll see how to calculate the polyatomic. Let's do a polyatomic that is nitrate, sulfate, SO42 minus. In SO42 minus, oxygen is a minus 2, but I don't know what sulfur is. So we create a small equation, sulfur plus 4 times oxygen must equal minus 2. Then I take the oxidation number for oxygen and plug it in. Sulfur plus 4 times the minus 2 must equal minus 2. Sulfur minus 8 must equal minus 2. Add 8 to both sides and sulfur equals plus 6. So now when I look at sulfate, I see sulfate as SO4 2 minus, there's the charge. The oxidation states are minus 2 and plus 6. So these are my oxidation numbers. And my charge state.
Why do you know the charge on the oxygen and not on the sulfur?
Because the oxygen I had a rule for in my rules. My rule said that combined oxygen was always minus 2. Sulfur has an electronegativity that is much closer to carbon, and sulfur can float and change in its oxidation state, whereas oxygen, being very close to fluorine, is more electronegative than almost every element on the periodic table and always wins in that battle, and so usually has a -2 oxidation state. The only exception is when it's bonding to itself, and then we treat it as a -1.
Okay. Rules. Thank you.
It goes back to the rules. Go ahead, Jeremy.
When we're trying to figure out the oxidation number for a compound, we write and look at the numbers for the individual atoms within the compound?
We do. We see if there's anything in the compound that we can apply the rule for. And then once we apply the rule for that, then anything else needs to be calculated, essentially.
Yeah. And so like right there on the screen, you have CF4 and carbon has a +4 oxidation number.
Right.
Fluorine has a -1, but we don't do anything with those numbers as far as like adding them together or balancing
out. But if you look at the sum of them, the sum, if I take, for instance.
Oh yeah, it is 0, huh?
Right.
Because you're following the rule. Yeah.
That's right. So +4, and the fluorine is -1, but there's 4 of them, so there's 4 negatives, so they add up to 0. -4 + 4 adds up to 0.
Yeah.
When I get down to the polyatomics, +5 and 2 × 4 - 8 add up to a 3-.
And so with SO4, sulfur has +6, oxygen has a -2, but -2 × 4 = -8.
And -8 + 6 = -2.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. Wow.
So you're absolutely right. When it's a molecule, if I have a molecule, meaning that it's covalent,
Without a charge,
then the charge state is 0.
Yeah. So the oxidation numbers add up to 0.
When it's a polyatomic, I have either plus or minus a number up here. So let's just say that I have some number, and usually they're minus. This is the charge state. The oxidation numbers add up to that charge state. So the rule is consistent. The rule does exactly the same thing. I'm just, for molecules, I'm either using 0 or I'm using the charge state.
And oxidation, the relationship of, or the status of the oxidation is more closely related to electronegativity than electrons, like kind of what Max suggested?
The rules are essentially coming out of electronegativity, or the rules are born out of electronegativity. Essentially what we're saying is that in the carbon fluorine sort of paradigm, fluorine being 4.0 in its electronegativity and carbon being 2.5. So these are the electronegativity values. What that means is that in the sharing of the bond, if I treat the carbon as one color, and this is carbon's electron, and I treat the fluorine in another color, and this is fluorine's electron, in the tug of war between the fluorine, which is massive, and the carbon, which is not so massive, and they're having a tug of war over these electrons, and the flag in that tug of war has been pulled more to the fluorine side and is winning that battle. And as such, we have always indicated that with a fluorine being partial minus and the carbon being partial positive, and the vector that is the dipole moment, that dipole moment is underlying the fact that in this bond between carbon and fluorine, that the oxidation number is -1, representing that fluorine is gaining that extra electron. That is sort of like the -1 that fluorine is picking up. And carbon, having lost an electron, is +1 in that battle. And so because this is covalent, there are no charges. However, the oxidation numbers substitute for charges and allow us to do a bookkeeping to be able to tell who is gaining and losing.
Is that blue electron that you signified with the -1, is that a shared electron?
It is, but it's shared unequally. Fluorine is getting more of it than carbon is.
Yeah.
So the rules are really born out of these electronegativity values. And Vanessa, you needed me to scroll up to the beginning of an example. I'm not sure where you wanted me to go while I was talking. Is that page 4?
No, just the
fossil. Oh, PO4.
Thank you.
Got it.
Does oxidation numbers follow the law of conservation?
Oxidation numbers are a man-made bookkeeping system. The law of conservation of matter, or conservation of mass, says that we have to have the same amount of mass on both sides. Yes, everything must follow that. In the universe, every single type of process must follow the law of conservation of matter. And even when matter is destroyed in certain types of processes, it is converted into pure energy, and we still have a balance between the energy and matter, and that is equated through E equals MC squared. So energy equals mass times the speed of light squared. So even when matter is converted into energy, we still have a mass balance, and we do that through E equals MC squared. And so that law of the universe is always, always in place. But this is a bookkeeping system and a slightly artificial system. Y plus four then four minus for carbon, because carbon, depending upon what it's bonding to, either has more electrons or has less electrons in a giving and taking sort of way. That carbon, depending upon what it bonds to, changes in its oxidation number. And so what I can see is that I can take carbon, and we'll maybe just do this before we do the break. I don't know if I can do all of the different oxidation states, but I can start by looking at carbon that is a CH4, and then moving into a carbon that has three hydrogens and an oxygen. I can do carbon that has a double bonded oxygen and two hydrogens. I can do a carbon that has two oxygens, or a carbon that has two oxygens like this. So this is methane, methanol, formaldehyde, this is methanoic acid or formic acid, and I've got too many hydrogens on it. There we go, that looks better. That's why I couldn't tell the name, because I'm looking at it and it's not matching up with my brain what it's supposed to be. This is formic acid, and this is carbon dioxide. The oxidation states in each of these for carbon, this one is a -4 for the carbon. This one is a -2. Let's see, that's a 2-. I got to do it all out now. So if I think about it as a formula, CH4O, the rules say that oxygen is a -2. These are each a +1. I don't know what carbon is, but carbon plus 4 × 1 plus the oxygen, which is a -2, all have to add up to 0. So carbon plus 4 - 2 equals 0, or carbon plus 2 equals 0, and therefore carbon equals a -2. So this is indeed exactly what I was about to write, a -2. In this one, carbon is 0. In this one, carbon is +2. And in this one, carbon is +4. And we see that carbon spans the gap between all of these different oxidation states, that carbon can have many different oxidation states depending upon what it is actually bonded to, because of carbon's sort of intermediate electronegativity. And so it gains and loses electrons dependent upon what it's actually bonding to. And we can go from the old rules as well. And the old rules are kind of helpful in this, that if we look at this, we can compare old rules and new rules. This is actually kind of a nice thing to do. Let me take this and I want to just move it down just a little bit. That as I move this direction, I am adding oxygen. It's also the loss of hydrogen. That was oxidation. The addition of oxygen. So that was one definition. The other definition was oxidation is loss of electrons. So oxidation is loss. And if I think of this as 4 extra, 2 extra, equal numbers, 2 less, 4 less, oxidation is loss. I am losing electrons as I go from a 4- to a 4+. So this is oxidation in terms of going to a higher oxidation number. The higher the oxidation number, the more electrons you have lost. So oxidation is lost, moving from negative to positive. I'm going to kind of leave that the way it is. I could also talk about it going this direction, that going this direction, this is reduction. And this is the adding of hydrogen. And loss of oxygen. And reduction is gain. And we'll put of electrons in there. And so as I go from +4, I gain 2 electrons to +2, I gain 2 electrons to a 0, I gain 2 electrons to a -2, I gain 2 electrons to a -4. So I can look at this as a series of carbon being oxidized in different oxidation states, or if starting at carbon dioxide, carbon is reduced through different oxidation states. And it's kind of nice to be able to see where we see that. And Eric, yes, hydrogen is always +1. And oxygen is always -2, unless the oxygen is in a peroxide, in which case it's -1.
I have one more question about the phosphate.
Okay.
Because everything doesn't add up to the charge state, because it adds up to positive 3, not negative 3.
If I have minus 8 plus 5.
Wait. Yes, then it adds up to negative 3.
Does that work?
Yes. But then the oxygen numbers are plus 5 and negative 2.
No. Oxygen is minus 2. Phosphorus is plus 5. So what we're seeing here is we're saying that phosphorus plus 4 times oxygen equals something.
Oh.
That is the plus 5 plus 4 times the minus 2 for oxygen. And that is 5 minus 8, which equals the minus 3.
I see it. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. That's a great spot to take a break. Let's take a 10-minute break. We'll come back, and then we'll show how we can actually assess an entire equation for oxidation numbers. And we can show where things are being oxidized and where things are being reduced. 10-minute break. We'll come back at, 11:32. We'll come back. Thank you.
1, 2, 3 uh-huh.
Showed me a house, showed me a home.
could all fall apart. Now won't you show me a little shame? Won't you show me a little shame? Won't you show me, hey, a little shame? 'Cause now I wake up in the morning more tired than before I slept. I get through crying and I'm sadder than before I wept. I get through thinking now and the thoughts have left my head. I get through speaking and I can't remember not a word that I said. You change your mind so many times. I wonder if you have a mind at all. Rather be by myself than to have your lonesome company come to call. Now won't you show me a little shame? Won't you show me a little shame? Show me a little shame. Won't you show me a little shame?
Somewhere be. Talk of days and night and what you want. You say forever, then it's way too long. Say hey, hey baby, when the nights turn to dawn and we're standing in the shadows, baby. All right, coming back in. I spent my break doing a bunch of emails that I needed to do. It's the way it goes. I'm in front of the computer. I got to get things done. Okay.
come back in and screen share. Back to Notability. And come on, Notability. Oh, because I got to stop the share here. There we go. So we've gone through the rules. We've gone through the different redox rules of how we assign the oxidation numbers. And we've even shown some examples of how we do this with polyatomics. The next thing that we do is we take and we look at a chemical reaction and the assignment of oxidation numbers within a chemical reaction. And a combustion, we can go through and we can look at an entire combustion as a good example. Although there are many different types of chemical reactions that we can do. So let's take C2H6 ethane and the combustion of ethane with oxygen to produce carbon dioxide and water. And I'll just take a second and balance it such that we have two carbon dioxides and three waters, and that's going to give me 4, 5, 6, 7. So I'm going to get 7, 2, 4, and 6. Okay, the equation is now balanced. I just wanted to start off with a balanced chemical equation. From the chemical equation, what I do is I go through and I first assign any oxidation numbers I can that are easy. Easy ones are things like elements, oxygen, which is 0, CO2, combined oxygen, -2, water, combined oxygen, -2, hydrogens are combined, so in a covalent molecule. So as a covalent molecule, each of the hydrogens are +1 and +1. And then I get down to the things that I don't have rules for. I don't have a rule for carbon in either of these locations. So I will have to then figure out what the oxidation number is for each one of those locations. And so I'll do a small formula. Now remember that these are molecules, and so that the charge on each one of these is 0. I don't have any polyatomics in here. And so for carbon, it is going to be 2 times the oxidation number for carbon plus 6 times the oxidation number for hydrogen is going to add to 0, the charge on the molecule. And because this is a molecule, there is no charge, it's 0. That means that 2 times carbon plus 6 times 1 equals 0, or 2 times carbon plus 6 equals 0, or 2 times carbon equals a -6, or carbon equals -3. So I now know what carbon is. Carbon is -3. In the CO2, we'll do a similar sort of formula. Carbon plus 2 times oxygen equals 0. Carbon plus 2 times a -2 equals 0. Or carbon -4 equals 0. Or carbon equals +4. So I now have the oxidation states for each of the elements. And what I will do is I will take and rewrite this just for clarity in the notes. Usually what I would do is I would rewrite just the question marks and put in the new numbers.
So carbon has a different oxidation. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Why didn't the coefficient, the 4 coefficient, get used?
That's a great question. The coefficients have no bearing on these, because when I look at the coefficient multiplies by the carbon and the hydrogen and would not change the outcome because it applies to everything equally inside the molecule. So I can completely ignore the coefficients and just focus on the molecule itself. Good question. Next up, who was fighting in there? Kerrigan, go.
So carbon has a different oxidation state on either side of the equation.
That is correct.
Okay, cool.
So we are -3 in the reactants and we are plus four in the products. And what we do then is we track those differences. We track those changes. Carbon is going from minus three to plus four. And the other change is oxygen is going from zero to minus two. So these are the two observed changes in oxidation state. All the other oxidation numbers are staying the same. These are the oxidation numbers that are changing. So what we say here is that oxygen, in going from zero to minus two, has gained electrons, and carbon has lost them. So oxidation is loss. This is what is called the oxidation half reaction. Carbon has lost electrons and has been oxidized. And over here, this is the reduction half reaction. You can't have oxidation without reduction. They go hand in hand. If you have one, you have to have the other. It's like creating a cation without ever creating an anion. When you create a cation, you also create an anion. They go together. They happen simultaneously. Jeremy, monatomic. Oh, why does 7O2 have an oxidation number of zero? Yes, Jeremy is correct. He's saying that the oxygen here is an element in its elemental state. There are a number of elements that are diatomic. I'll get that in a second, and we'll highlight those. Oxygen here has gained electrons, and as such, has been reduced. Okay, so there's that part. O2. O2 is oxygen in its elemental state. It's not exactly that it's monatomic. Monatomic is kind of one way to say that. It's not actually monatomic, it's actually diatomic. But it is a single element and a single symbol. And so oxygen in its elemental state is diatomic.
What?
So when we see oxygen from the periodic table, there is this, which is an oxygen atom. There is an O2 minus, which is oxide. And there is an O2, which is oxygen gas. And oxygen this way does not exist in nature. Oxygen from the periodic table combines to form a diatomic molecule. And when we say oxygen, we really mean O2, not O, that it exists as a diatomic from the periodic table. There are many elements on the periodic table that do that. So the elements on the periodic table that do that, we have a way of remembering them. Sometimes people call it Hofbräunkel or Brinkelhoff. The elements that are diatomic on the periodic table are hydrogen, oxygen, fluorine, bromine, iodine, nitrogen, and chlorine. I have another way of remembering them. Rather than remembering Hofbrinckel or Brinckelhoff as I've written out the name there, sort of, I remember that nitrogen, oxygen, fluorine, chlorine, bromine, and iodine, and their location on the periodic table as the halogens, and then the nitrogen and oxygen that come before fluorine in period two. And so I just kind of remember their location and that those elements are the ones that are diatomic. And I just picture them where they are in the periodic table.
So just because there's one letter in O2 doesn't mean that it's monatomic. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's not monatomic. It's diatomic. Monatomic means that if I have something like helium is a monatomic element. So helium doesn't exist as H2. It exists as just single hydrogen, as a single helium atom. Sodium can be monatomic. As soon as we go to di to two, then we say diatomic. So this is a diatomic molecule, for each one of these. These are diatoms.
Makes sense, I guess. I just thought monatomic meant one kind of molecule.
Right, or one type of element.
Yeah, one type of element,
exactly. And that's not bad. That's a reasonable use. We're just refining our language each time. We're getting more precise as we go along the course, which is good.
But it's diatomic because as it actually occurs in nature, there's two of the oxygens, so it's di, not mono.
That's right.
Cool.
Yep. Okay. So when we see these, we need to recognize that as being in its elemental state. So all of these are in their elemental state. That's how they exist. Okay, so that's why the O2 is zero. Now to this idea of half reactions. Let me do another equation and look at the oxidation numbers, and then I will write half reactions for you, and we will actually look at writing out half reactions. Another very classic example of redox is the reaction of two sodiums plus chlorine gas going to make sodium chloride as a solid. So this is a gas and a solid. Sodium metal is bright and shiny and fairly soft. You can cut it with a knife. It's pretty cool stuff, actually. And it needs to be kept airtight and usually underneath oil in order to prevent oxidation from the air and from attack from water. Chlorine gas is extremely dangerous and if inhaled, produces hydrochloric acid in your lungs and in your mucous membranes, and is lethal if you inhale chlorine gas. But when you combine chlorine gas and sodium, that sodium actually, when you throw it into water, produces hydrogen gas and explodes, you combine that metal, which is very dangerous to handle, and that chlorine gas, which will kill you, and we make table salt. Interesting, just how that works. I don't know, you guys are laughing, you think that's good. I mean, it's true, I mean, it's really true. It's just, that's the way it is. Chemistry is odd like that. But this is a redox reaction. If we take a look at the oxidation numbers are sodium in its elemental state, chlorine in its elemental state, and then these guys over here, these are ions, and they are cation and anion. And so their oxidation numbers are the same as their monatomic ion charge. So sodium is plus one, and chlorine is minus one. And I have a change in that chlorine is going to minus one, and sodium is going to plus one. So oxidation is loss. This is the oxidation side. Sodium has lost an electron. And chlorine has gained that electron. So going from zero to an extra electron, an electron has been gained. This is reduction is gain. And this is the reduction half reaction. And when I write it out, I can actually write them out in what we call half reactions. In writing the half reactions, what I write is sodium goes to form sodium as a plus one, plus an electron. This is the oxidation half reaction, the loss. We can actually see the loss now. And for the chlorine, I have to use the Cl2, and it is going to pick up two electrons. I'm going to move it over a little bit so that it's over here on the other side of the arrow. And it goes to form two Cl minuses. And now we can see the gain. This side is the loss as product. And this side is the gain as reactant. This then is the reduction half reaction. And through these half reactions, redox reactions are balanced through their half reactions. In other words, to balance a redox reaction, what we typically do is we balance it through the half reaction. We take the sodium going to form sodium plus, plus an electron, and the chlorine. And what we do is we balance the number of electrons. So we take the number of electrons that are here and here, and we need to make the number of electrons the same by taking and multiplying a two coefficient by everything in order to get the same number of electrons. Now, when I add the two equations together, the two equations will cancel each other out for the numbers of electrons. What I get is two sodium plus chlorine plus two electrons goes to make two sodiums plus two chlorides plus two electrons. And the two electrons now on both sides can cancel out. And the reaction has been balanced in the number of electrons that have been traded, lost and gained, so that the actual reaction is 2Na plus Cl2 goes to form 2, and then we would combine these together, NaCl as the ionic compound, and that would be the balanced equation. All redox reactions are balanced in this way, by balancing the half reactions, by multiplying the half reactions by some coefficient in order to equal the number of electrons that are being lost and gained. And that makes sense, that if something is going to lose electrons and the other thing is going to gain them, that I want the number lost to be equal to the number gained. Otherwise, I won't have equality in the transaction.
I get it formulaically. That's not a word, formulaically.
It worked for me.
I get it, but like in the lab, you don't have the precise, right? Like there's always going to be, like you don't have the precise amount of both molecules, right? So there's always going to be like leftover, whether it's like.
I love that question because that question goes directly to the next chapter.
Oh, okay.
But it's cool. This is a perfectly great place to be able to ask that question. Let me ask you this, Jeremy. Let's say that we take you back to the bicycle factory. And
I love it there.
Yeah, and your job is to assemble bicycles.
That's probably exactly how a bike that I built would look.
Okay, that's good. That's all right. But let's say that you had 30 frames, and let's say that you had 25 tires, or actually not 25 tires. Let's go with a nice 30, 60, what do I need? Maybe 50 tires. How many bikes can you make?
Only 25.
Yeah, you can only make 25 bikes.
When I have extra frames.
That's right. Chemical reactions work exactly that way. When you run out of a component, they will trade in equal numbers until we run out of sodium or run out of chlorine. And then that component that is left over and unreacted. And so, yes, in essence, you are correct that when we mix these, we never mix them in absolutely perfect proportions, but they react in perfect proportions. And then when the reaction is done in perfect proportions, something is always left over.
Right. So does that make the leftover spectators or just non-consequential, or like it's not included in the formula?
You're right. It's not, but we can account for it in the mass balance, and it is not accounted for in the formula. It's in a problem type that is called limiting reagent. And what happens is the limiting reagent, when that reagent runs out, the reaction is terminated, the reaction is done, and you can produce only so much product. You can only produce 25 bikes. And after you produce 25 bikes, we've gone through, we use 25 frames, there's 5 frames left over. So basically what we get is we get this plus 5. And they're just left over. And so they're not called spectators, but they are an unreacted component that is left over after the reaction is done. And similarly, if we had more sodium, we might have some leftover sodium in this reaction. If we had some leftover chlorine, we'd have leftover chlorine, but they will react in these exact proportions until such time as one runs out. So that's a great little preamble to where we're going.
And they don't react with each other.
So the sodiums will not react with the sodiums, and the chlorines will not react with the chlorines. They will only react sodium to chlorine in trading the electrons in that way.
Because they're both cations or both anions, I assume, right?
They are neutral elements to start off, but the neutral element of sodium will not react with another neutral sodium because neither one wants to gain or lose electrons with each other. There's no reason to trade.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing's gained in the trading of electrons in that way. Okay, those are all great, great questions to clarify. Okay, let me see if I can take us back to what I need to do. I need to do one more thing here with redox. Terminology. In this reaction that we just looked at, where we looked at sodium reacting with chlorine to produce 2 sodium chlorides, we had the half reactions, and we said that sodium was changing oxidation state and that chlorine is likewise changing oxidation state, and that one of these is the oxidation, and it helps if we have the oxidation numbers there to be able to look at. This was plus one and minus one, so that we know what's gaining and what is losing. The sodium losing, oxidation is lost. This is the oxidation. And the chlorine gaining is the reduction. So I can list four different things. The species being oxidized. The species being reduced. I can list the oxidizing agent. Sometimes we say reagent. Or the reducing agent. Reducing agent, there we go. Also sometimes called the reagent. Okay, the species being oxidized. What is being oxidized? These are the reactants. So when I look at the species being oxidized and the species being reduced, these guys here, these are reactants. And so the species being oxidized is sodium metal. The species being reduced is chlorine gas. Or I could just say the sodium and the chlorine. I don't really need to include their state there. But those are the species that are undergoing change. And perhaps it helps if I take and list it this way, because I chose reduction to be in blue. I could style all of that in blue. That is the species being reduced. And because this is oxidized, I could say that is in red. Okay, now the oxidizing agent. What is the oxidizing agent? The oxidizing agent is that thing that is causing oxidation. It is what is causing the sodium to be oxidized. So when I think about the oxidizing agent, maybe I ought to put just a little bit more room in here and define the term before I give you what the answer is. This term is defined as the species causing the sodium to be oxidized. If we had to guess, what is causing the sodium to be oxidized, what would you say? What is it that is causing this half to happen? What is reacting with sodium to make sodium be oxidized? And the key word was there, what is reacting with sodium?
The chlorine?
The chlorine.
Really?
Really.
Cool.
It is the chlorine. She's always so pleasantly surprised. It's the chlorine that is the other reactant. There's only two reactants. And so what is reacting with the sodium is the chlorine. The chlorine is causing the sodium to be oxidized. So the oxidizing agent is the chlorine.
Does that mean that the sodium is causing the chloride to, or chlorine to reduce?
That's right. So that means in this one, this is the sodium metal, which is the reducing agent, because it's causing the chlorine to be reduced. Yes. Where are the oxidizing and reducing agent both called? Why are they called both reagents? It's just the way that we refer to a reagent. A reagent is something that is added to effect a change. And so it's not as if we call them both reagents, meaning that's an alternative name for oxidizing agent and reducing agent. I'm saying that agent and reagent are replaceable. So I could say oxidizing reagent, or I could say oxidizing agent. I can say reducing agent or reducing reagent. The word agent and reagent are being used simultaneously or being used interchangeably, Ayla. I think that's what I'm trying to say.
So there's never a redox reaction that doesn't have both reduction and oxidation happening.
That is absolutely correct. In the same way that you cannot have an acid-base reaction without either an acid, that you must have one act as an acid and one act as a base, or you don't have an acid-base reaction. They come in pairs. So
but in an acid-base reaction, you have, so on the left side of the equation, you have to have both acid and base?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so yeah, back to your question, is it an acid or base? If I have HCl, which is an acid, and it reacts with water to produce hydronium and chloride ion, then the HCl is linked to the chloride ion.
Oh, I see.
And the water is linked to the hydronium. And this one acted as the acid in donating the proton. This one acted as the base in accepting it. The molecule that accepts the proton is always the base. And this would be the conjugate acid and the conjugate base.
Yeah, so exactly like you said, it's they're parallel in that way.
That's right. You can't have one without the other, because the act of acting produces the other thing to act in the opposite way.
I think I thought with acid base reductions that you could either have one and then end up with the other, or vice versa, but it's totally equal. It's balanced.
That's right.
In both cases.
That's right. And there are some equations like this acid base reaction. Let me show you this acid base reaction. This is just a great example too. HCl plus H2O goes to form H3O plus plus chloride minus. This acid-base reaction, let's check it to see if it's a redox reaction. So we're going to check to see if redox. And what we're looking for is we're looking for changes in oxidation numbers. If there's no change, it's not a redox. If there is a change, it's a redox. So we go through and we define all the oxidation numbers that we can. Combined hydrogen plus one, combined hydrogen plus one, combined oxygen minus two, combined hydrogen plus one, combined oxygen minus two, monatomic ion, same as the charge state, minus one. There's only one thing that I don't know, and that's the chloride. But when I go through and figure out what the chloride is, it is hydrogen plus chloride must equal zero. So plus one plus chloride must equal zero, or chloride must equal minus one. So I do know this. It's minus one. And look at what happens. Hydrogen is plus one, plus one, plus one. Hydrogen is nothing other than plus one. It never changes. Chloride, minus one, minus one. It doesn't change. Oxygen, minus two, minus two. There are no changes in oxidation numbers. And therefore, this is not a redox reaction.
Yeah, I would have guessed the opposite just by looking at the results.
Right, but you can't always tell by looking at the results, because what you saw is you saw charges and you thought, oh, the incurring of charges must mean that electrons are being traded, but they're not. Remember that an acid base, remember this, acid base.
But it is true that electrons are being traded.
Mm-mm, they're not.
Then how does the charge happen?
That's what I was about to get to. That's a great question. Acid base is the trading of protons.
Oh.
Not electrons. The trading of proton is what determines acid base. Redox is the trading of electrons.
Got it.
Therein is the difference. So that's a great
difference. Do you have problems that will be both acid base and redox though?
Where I can see acid base occurring with the redox at the same time?
Yeah.
No. I can't think of any. No, they're independent of each other. We could have an acid base and then have the product go and do a redox reaction. For instance, sometimes you'll do acid base and then you'll do decomposition, and the decomposition can sometimes be a redox. One example is that of that, and I don't know if this is redox, I'm just off the top of my head, I think this might be, so I'm going to give it to you. Ever take vinegar and baking soda and mix vinegar and baking soda together? And it goes, you get the volcano reaction, right? So this is when you make the volcano in grade school and you pour in the baking soda and you throw some vinegar on top of it and the thing just erupts out, and you put a little bit of red food dye in it in order to make it look red as the volcano is exploding. Or you did it in a plastic bag and you ziplocked it and you threw it so that it could explode so the plastic bag blew up. Or a teenager gets more ambitious and you decide to throw it in a plastic water bottle and put the lid on it, and then you run like hell because when it blows big.
Yeah.
Yeah, all those things. Yeah, okay. So just thinking about all those different things. That reaction of acetic acid, CH, let's do it this way, HC2H3O2. This is acetic acid, essentially vinegar. Acetic acid is vinegar in 5% solution. So vinegar is 5% by mass acetic acid. And you mixed that with baking soda, which was sodium bicarbonate. Which is pure baking soda. They react in an acid-base reaction to produce sodium acetate, C2H3O2, plus H2CO3. This is carbonic acid. This was an acid-base reaction where the acetic acid is the acid and the sodium bicarbonate is the base. And they produce a salt, in this case, and they produce carbonic acid. And there's no changes in oxidation numbers. So if I go through and do the oxidation numbers, there's no changes in oxidation numbers here. But the carbonic acid undergoes a spontaneous decomposition reaction where it breaks down into H2O and CO2. And the H2O is a liquid and the CO2 is a gas. And therein is the bubbles that we see when we mix the two together. Now, the decomposition, hydrogen was plus one, and oxygen was minus two, and carbon, I don't know, I'll have to sort out, but I've got plus one, minus two, I've got minus two and plus four, because I could do that one in my head, but the other one I'm not going to do in my head. I'm going to do the other one as a formula. So 2 times a plus 1 plus carbon plus 3 times a minus 2 has to add up to 0. Or 2 plus carbon minus 6 equals 0. Or carbon minus 4 equals 0. Or carbon still equals plus 4. All right, so this was not redox because this is plus 4. And it's not redox either, but it is decomposition.
So in redox, there is a change or there's not a change?
In redox, there is a change. In redox, yes. In redox, I would see a change in the oxidation numbers. And in this one, there was no redox. I thought that there might be because most of the time decompositions are redox, but not always. And that's why when I gave you the definitions before, going back to those, wherever I did them, I think I said, yeah, I did. I said frequently, but not always redox. So we just showed that, that sometimes they're not. And great. That was kind of nice to see.
Thank you.
All right.
So just going back to that whole vinegar and baking soda thing, how much vinegar and how much baking soda do you have to use? Or just like any amount?
Like the bicycle thing. If you have more bicarbonate, you'll have some bicarbonate left over. If you have more baking soda, more vinegar, you'll have vinegar left over. So we could do a great question. I have 2 minutes, but we could say, this is the fun part. What if I wanted it to come out just perfect? How much of each thing would I need to do? This is a great lead in to where we're going and what we want to be able to do. Let's take that chemical equation. I'm trying to grab just this. And let's say that you have a balance at home, and you were able to weigh out 5.62 grams of this sodium bicarbonate. And you want to figure out how much of this material you need in order to react it completely and have it react perfectly. And the other thing is that this comes in a 5% by mass solution in terms of the acetic acid. We could go through and go through the grams of NaHCO3. So here's your roadmap. We go from grams of sodium bicarbonate. We go to the moles of sodium bicarbonate. We go to the moles of acetic acid, HC2H3O2. We go to the grams of HC2H3O2. And then, I don't have room on my map, so I'm gonna go down. We go to the grams of vinegar through the 5%, using the 5% by mass. And then if we wanted to get it into volume, we could use the density. We'd have to know what the density of the vinegar solution is, but it would be close to 1. And we could go to the volume in milliliters of vinegar. And we could figure out how many milliliters of vinegar there need to be for my 5.62 grams. And that would be your roadmap. And this would be the percent conversion factor that got us from there. This is your mole bridge, which is the stoichiometry that is 1-to-1 ratio in our coefficients. And then your molar masses are getting you the other conversion factors. You already know how to answer this question yourself. I'm just showing you that you already know it. And at some point, remind me, we'll use that as an example. We'll come back and we'll actually calculate that on another day when we're doing the stoichiometries. But absolutely, you already know how to do this. You just haven't done it yet. You have all the pieces. You just need to put them all together in the right way.
I have a question.
Okay.
When you look at the formula, how do you know how to rearrange, like in what order to rearrange it?
That's a little harder. In the acid-base reaction, I know that I wouldn't give it to you quite this way. Let me give it to you in a slightly different way and then you'll see it, okay? So another way of writing this formula is that HC2H3O2 plus hydrogen carbonate goes to form acetate C2H3O2 minus plus carbonic acid. This was the acid. This was the base. This is the conjugate base. And the conjugate acid, carbonic acid, is the conjugate acid of bicarbonate. And it's a little bit easier because now just a proton is being traded back and forth. And that's because this is an acid and base reaction. And so literally what I'm tracking is I'm tracking that guy, which is going over here and is adding to the other formula. And so it gets a little bit easier to track. Why was it harder to track in this one? And we didn't see it because something was in the way. What was in the way? What did I get rid of? What is not in this equation that is in this one?
The sodium.
Right. And why can I leave the sodium out?
Because it's always soluble?
Close. There's something that we call when you sit on the sidelines and you watch a game going on and you're not taking part. Spectator ion. The sodium is a spectator ion. It's not participating in the chemical reaction. And so we can drop out the spectator ion. And Jeremy's partially right because it's always soluble. It's in solution. It doesn't precipitate. The sodium is a spectator ion to the acid-base reaction. It looks like it's trading, but the sodium's really not trading partners. It's a spectator ion. And so it was getting in the way of seeing where things were going. So that helps. All right, you know what? We need to do lunch. I need to do lunch. I'm a little hungry. I'm hungry after all my frustration this morning. I'm going to go eat lunch.
Yeah,
and
I was going to follow up on that. What do you want us to keep working on our problems and then submit them?
Yeah, keep working on those 10, submit those. And then sometime tonight when I sort out all my Canvas issues and I stop swearing, I'll send out another email and say that we can go for the other project and have you guys go try to do that. And I don't know what I'll do with the afternoon class yet. I'm going to go ponder that while I make a sandwich. Yeah, and I'll have office hours today for sure. Yeah, 3:30 to 5:15. Okay?
Thank you.
You guys are awesome.
You're awesome.
See you. Bye. Thank you.
See you guys. You're welcome. Thanks, guys. I'm going to go ahead and end it. So I'll see you later.